You're listening to the Restaurant Operator Podcast.
Get the latest restaurant industry headlines delivered to your inbox every weekday with Restaurant Operator Daily. With this one newsletter, you'll get the top stories from leading news sites like fastcasual.com, pizzamarketplace.com, and qsrweb.com. Join more than 30,000 subscribers who rely on Restaurant Operator Daily to keep them informed on the most important industry news and trends. Subscribe today at restaurantoperatordaily.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Restaurant Operator Podcast, a NetWorld Media Group podcast in which we bring you the latest news and technologies from the food industry. I'm Mandy Detweiler, editor of Pizza Marketplace and QSR Web. Today, we have Charles Wetzel, CEO of Calibrate, with us. Calibrate's a company specializing in providing data, software, and consultancy that helps businesses make critical decisions with confidence. Thanks so much for being with us today, Charles.
Thank you, Mandy. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Calibrate.
So, you know, Calibrate actually started back in 1970, and it started primarily on the fuel and convenience side, or the fuel and mobility retail side, helping providers of those organizations identify where to put locations from a gasoline perspective. And as the world has evolved, Calibrate got more and more into location intelligence, specifically with hospitality brands and restaurants and retail, to where today, you know, a large portion of our business looks to the restaurant community and looks to identify from a global perspective who your customers are, where they're located, and the value of those customers, and how that translates into a location intelligence offering.
Well, tell us about your background.
So my background, not to take you all the way back, so I won't, but I started in strategic consulting, specifically for Ernst & Young. And when I got out of undergrad, telecom was really the business that you helped consult on. And over the years, just kind of was looking for an opportunity to provide a solution, or to at least a customer base that I felt added a little bit more value. And I stumbled into a company that specialized in just this and kind of what we're doing. And I learned it from the ground up. I learned understanding about first party data, third party data, understanding kind of the business questions that people had, and have been in this space for about 20 years now.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Well, I like to think I'm a little young, but the reality is I've been in the space for a long time. The neat thing about all of that is, while the business questions might still kind of, they're similar, there's a lot of fluidity in the space and a lot of changes. And what we've realized is that our solution, which is the analytics backbone, if you would, really has evolved and grown as companies really kind of harden their types of questions that they're wanting to do. And then also just in terms of how the businesses have evolved and changed from the early 2000s to now, and just coming through the pandemic in terms of what that means to operators and things of that nature.
Well, let's get into the nuts and bolts of our podcast today. What are the main challenges that QSRs are looking to solve when they reach out to Calibrate?
You know, I think the fundamental question, whether they're small, medium, or large, if they're reaching out to us, they're either going into markets that they're not necessarily familiar with, or they've opened up a location that has just not performed the way that they thought. Now, that opening could be it performed a lot better, or it performed a lot worse, or if it's a new location around existing locations, it could have impacted existing locations more than they thought. And so they're looking to identify who their customer is, how their customer interacts and evolves with them, during the course of the day and the evening and the weekend. They're looking to identify the purchasing behavior. Is a certain segment more similar to a dine-in customer? If they have dine-in up capabilities, or they want third-party delivery, do they want drive-through? Are they sought after just as much if they're in-line versus a pad site? Those are typically the questions that we get started with, but they're typically around something's happened that just caused them to give them pause.
What are some of those things that might give them pause?
You know, I think I think, you know, just, I think everyone wants to have success, right? So failure typically gives people a pause. Or, you know, in the world that you and I live in today, where there's a lot of, you know, private equity dollars investing in these brands, you know, they want to ensure that the right protocols and the processes are embedded into these organizations. And so they're wanting to make sure that, you know, that there's a certain, you know, dollar amount that they can spend, and they want to be able to extract as much value out of that as possible. And so, you know, I think traditionally, you know, going into a new market, stubbing their toe with a new location, whether it's from a performance perspective or a cannibalization perspective, or just wanting to harden or codify their analytic rigor, by no means do anything that we do, you know, replaces anything. We really view ourselves as an augmentation or another tool in the toolbox. And so it's people also just wanting to get smarter and really faster with how they execute against certain decisions.
When brands are looking to expand, what does, let's say, good look like in terms of data usage and application of analytics?
You know, I think, you know, it's going to sound kind of silly, but I think the first part, you have to look at what you have, right? Yourself as the operator. Like, you know, do you have a good handle of like where your locations are? I know that sounds crazy, but sometimes people are like, you know, I don't actually know where exact my locations are, but it's understanding, you know, the physical location. And, you know, sometimes people say, you know, I also have site characteristics. Not every location is the same. So sometimes people are allowed to put signage up. Sometimes people are closer to an entrance and further away. Sometimes people have great co-tenancy. So it's really understanding kind of who your location is. And then, like, do you have access to, you know, what type of access to sales do you have? Do you have access to just like the dollar flow through at the location? Can you parse it out by day part? Can you parse it out by weekend? Or do you see a total dollar amount? And then do you have customer data? You know, is it, do you have a loyalty management system? And then do you have an idea of who your customer is to that? Now, that's kind of where we start. And, you know, net net, you don't have to really have a lot of that for you to start the analytic journey. You know, I think just becoming from the analytic bent, you know, more, we do think more is probably the better place to start, but we've started with customers that have nothing. They have no locations. They have no customer data. They have no sales. They have a thought, an idea, and they want to benchmark it or evaluate it against either an existing location or a trader that they're considering for operation.
So you work with a lot of operators in the QSR space. Can you tell us about a partnership that you're particularly proud of?
You know, I without coming off, you know, too smug, I mean, we really have a lot of great relationships. And I think, you know, I think a little bit of us, we have a lot of stories where we started where, you know, concepts have been really small and we've grown with them over time, right? Those are kind of fun because, you know, you're throwing a lot of it at it and you're kind of looking at that. And then you have very mature brands, right? So I think, you know, in terms of kind of, if you kind of were to look at kind of a sampling of kind of who we do business with that, you know, are can be seen in articles or our logos or our customers actually reference us, you have, you know, really good mature global brands like Yum Brands, right? The Taco Bells, the KFCs, the Pizza Huts of the world. You have very fast growing brands that are becoming, you know, very dominant, like a Raising Cane's. And then you have brands that, you know, we've grown up with, like Dairy Queen, that are, you know, continuing to evolve, like who they are, how they kind of come to market, and like what products they have. You know, each one of those are a little bit different. You know, just being in Texas and kind of being around the Raising Cane's, the Louisiana story of that, has been really neat to watch. It's an account that personally, like, I've been involved in, and just kind of, you know, understanding kind of their persona and kind of what they're trying to do. It's been a pretty exciting journey to watch. But it's also, you know, they have, you know, each one of those examples that, you know, they have great people. You know, like, they have people that want to dive into more and then don't just want an answer. They want to know the answer behind the answer. And I think that's actually what makes a fundamental relationship really good, especially with an analytics provider, it's someone that, you know, isn't skeptical, but like questions and prods the solution. And what we found is that when there's that kind of give and take in terms of a working relationship, you really kind of, iron sharpens iron, right? So you just codify and create a much better solution for that customer.
Interactions between sales channels has been a growing topic. How can QSR operators understand sales potential across restaurants, delivery, and drive-through?
Yep. And I think a little bit of that's going to differ by urbanicity. Like, you know, if you're in downtown versus a rural area, a little bit of that's going to differ on regionality. And a little bit of that's going to differ on, like, what does the competitive set do, right? I do believe that you should look at the trade area and understand what the demand of that trade area is. Because you can really go down a maze to identify what's the best channel, but you really should look at it from, like, what do I expect that this trade area should generate from a revenue perspective, right? And then I think it's understanding kind of what's in the market. And that kind of goes back to the site characteristics. Not to suggest you shouldn't pioneer certain sales channels, but understanding kind of like what goes on in that market. You know, I think, you know, within the last 5 years, we've seen a lot of QSRs go from some third party delivery to, you know, greater than 50 to 70% third party delivery, right? I think that question then is, do you have a product that actually can transport well? And do you have a product that actually, when delivered, carries the message and the marketing that you want it to have, right? So completely different from like where the location is, but like does the delivery of that product come back, and is the delivery cost, is it affordable? You know, and so but I think what you're seeing right now is you're seeing a lot of experimentation, which I think is healthy. I think you're seeing, you know, people that have never done a drive-through try to do a drive-through. I think you're seeing people that have done a drive-through do multiple drive-throughs. You're seeing the place that people eat shrink a little bit. You're seeing multiple options to walk up, pick up. You're seeing also kind of a demarcation between customer entry and third-party delivery entry. So you can kind of keep that user experience if someone's choosing to eat at a, you know, high level. Not that a third-party delivery individual, you know, denigrates that, but like it just kind of keeps it a little bit cleaner. You're also looking, you know, you're also seeing, like, especially for the ones that are doing drive-through, they're moving the kitchen a little bit closer to the drive-through, right? So they're optimizing their internal four walls, and so you're seeing a lot of experimentation. But I think first and foremost, you need to understand kind of what the trade area is getting today. You need to understand what your competitors are providing in that area. And then you need to identify whether or not that those channels are channels that, number one, you can adopt if you don't have them. And then two, the channels that you do have that you know that you do well would work well in that area.
What's the value of sound market planning as QSRs look to grow? And what are the risks of getting it wrong?
Well, I think, you know, we've all seen it, right? We're all kind of subject to it to a certain extent. You're like, man, that's a great restaurant. That would do awesome in my neighborhood. And then you tell the waiter or the waitress or the general manager, you're like, man, this is great. You know, you just kind of inquire from it. I think, you know, a lot of the emerging, you know, fast growing brands, I think a lot of them do that, right? They're like, oh yeah, I should go there. And you know, they kind of almost, it almost supersedes logic sometimes, right? So I think just, you know, there's really kind of, there's multiple ways to grow, right? But if you look at it just from a simplistic way, you can grow within your existing market. You can grow from an adjacent market perspective. And then you can grow in a non-adjacent way, right? And so just to kind of use, an example, let's just say it's a QSR that specializes more in like seafood, for instance, and more on the fresh side. You probably, you know, more than likely it started on the coast. And so, you know, what's the best strategy for that? It's probably north and south, you know, to keep going up and down that coast. It's probably not west or east initially. And so that I think is one of those kind of fundamental mistakes, is when people kind of either go a little too fast or they go the wrong direction. It's more predicated on gut than data, because the rule of thumb is, for every bad location, you need to have 4 to 5 good performing locations, right? So what typically happens, especially if you're a small or emerging brand, if you have a location that's not, checking all the boxes, it sucks all your energy. And so then it starts impacting your good locations. And so that ultimately is what I've kind of seen from a potential mistake that might be made.
What's the entry point in terms of cost and internal resource for location intelligent solutions?
I think ultimately the entry cost is really what someone's willing to pay for, right? I mean, because you can do it for a couple $100 and you can do it for millions of dollars, right? There's ways to do it all, right? I think ultimately you need to identify what you're trying to solve for first. And so more times than not, people want to understand the customer profile. From there it gets to, I need to understand kind of like how my locations interact with my competitive set. Sometimes competitors are a good thing, sometimes they're a bad thing. What happens if they're next door to you? What happens if they're between you and where your customer comes from? Does that intercept impact you? I think from there it normally gets to like, what are the variables I see around my success? And I think as you begin to add more ingredients, if you would, to the equation, typically the cost would go up as well, but typically you unlock more and more value. And so, it's definitely not my sense, but I've always heard, our customers say, boy, I know that we negotiated a really hard deal, but my gosh, you stopped me from doing that one location, and that more than paid for you, or you unlocked a potential site that we always thought was going to be good, but we didn't know it was going to be great. And just that additional, you never get too much credit on the analytics side if it does great. You're always going to get more eyeballs at you if you say something and it doesn't happen. But normally you would expect it to be, a percent of your performance. And typically that percent is, in the single digits in terms of cost.
Well, this was a lot of good information. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Mandy. We appreciate the time and the questions.
And thank you to everyone tuning in. If you'd like to find out more about Calibrate and their services, visit calibrate.com. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you can get notified when new podcast episodes become available. We'll see you next time. Thanks so much.